Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, just a note to say that this podcast episode contains spoilers and some adult themes.
So, first things first, before we start, did you see the priest?
Unfortunately, and I'm really sorry to disappoint.
Oh, no.
I did not see the priest.
Why?
I don't know, because I was there, and she was supposedly there as well.
And did you see the parade type
nothing
thing? nothing. Where were they?
I don't know. Where was I? Maybe I was in a toilet for a long time and I just missed it.
Well, that's a little bit too much insight.
Just to get away from work for a second.
Yeah.
It's okay, I think I'm over her now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's taken quite a while.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, like, when I run into her again, it will all come back.
Damn.
But I think only briefly.
What a year-long journey we went on with Hot Priest.
I know.
We were like the gay flea bag for so long.
Oh my God. I know.
Everyone was like, literally, like, all of my friends that were listening, I think I said this last time to you, they were like, any updates? Where is she? What is she doing? Has Joyce said anything to her? And I was like, I don't know.
No.
The people have to been demanding.
I have been demanding answers as well. She's just never there anymore. I run into her husband all the time.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. By him and not her.
So obviously she's still in that area then.
Yeah.
Unless they got divorced. Okay, so she's still active in the community.
Yeah, she still lives here. I just never see her.
Sad times.
I know. But it's fine. I'm over it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever you
chapter
need to
close.
Whatever you need to say to sleep at night.
And we're live.
Do I make you nervous, Corky?
I'm a homosexual.
A lesbian.
I'm a homosexual.
I have loved you the way they said.
You fancy gears?
I'm having a proper full-on gay crisis.
Hello and welcome to Gay Actually. Thanks for being here. It's going to be a fun old gay time.
Pitch Perfect is a lesbian musical film.
Of course.
I want to carry off badass lesbian chic like Kate Blanchett can.
Welcome. Hello everyone. Welcome back to Gay Actually, the podcasting space for all of your LGBTQ+ shenanigans and film, TV, and media-related content.
Sing it, girl.
I didn't mean to have that type of inflection. It just kind of came out. Like,
I like it. It's melodic.
Melodic.
Okay.
Anyway, I am Amber, and as always, I am joined by the lovely Joyce.
Hi.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's going all right.
So this is our episode for the UK Film Review Podcast. Probably should have said welcome back to the UK Film Review Podcast.
Oops.
Welcome back to the UK Film Review Podcast.
We're just the main characters, honestly, so.
I don't know if Chris and co would agree, but...
Oh, I just mean like in our space.
Our podcasting space. It is us, ourselves, and we.
Beautiful.
But we have to make an apology that we missed you in April. You may have seen, or you may not have, if you don't care. We did not have an episode come out in April. That was due to a myriad of circumstances. I started a new job.
Woo!
Thank you.
Go, Amber.
And then lost my voice subsequently 2 weeks later, which was really, really fun for me. Mm. A real induction test, if you will. And then you went back to Belgium.
Yeah.
For a little bit. So circumstances just kind of got in the way, and that was fine. Hey, we move, but we're back in full force. Lots of episodes coming your way. Stay tuned. You can follow us on Instagram at @gay_actually for more information. Joyce is laughing at me because I'm saying this all at once.
No, I mean, it's absolutely great. And thank you for getting all the information.
I just basically put a story on saying, sickness, Belgium.
New job, though. Best news of all. And I'm so happy for you and well done.
Thank you.
So what are we talking about in today's episode?
Well, Joyce, I'm so glad you asked. On this month's episode of the UK Film Review Podcast, we are going to try not to creak our chairs all the time and upset headphone users. Sorry.
That's new. Okay. I'll try.
But also, we are going to be talking about the films of Francis Lee.
Woohoo!
Specifically, God's Own Country and Ammonite, his two feature-length films. For those of you that don't know, Francis Lee is an English filmmaker. So true to UK film review spirit, we're talking about an English filmmaker. His films are set in England. And we're going to be talking about both of them in this episode. That's just so you know. If you do the thing where you like to watch the films before you listen to our podcast, here's your cue. We'll wait. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed them.
That was a very satisfying silence. Like, I could, like, feel it in the air.
It was palpable, wasn't it? Okay. So shall we start chronologically? Shall we start chronologically?
Yes, for sure.
Great. Let's start with God's Own Country. That was a 2017 film, and it was Francis Lee's directorial feature-length debut. He'd done a few short films before this. This was his first feature-length. Would you like to summarise?
Yes.
Great.
So
sorry, I've just lost... We hit record and I just lost the plot. We said so many funny things. Oh, before we get into the films, can we discuss your revelation before I started recording? And I really wish... I managed to snap a picture of you, but I really wish that I'd got it recorded because... I told Joyce accidentally on purpose, season 3 spoiler of the L Word Generation Q.
Oh.
The reboot series of the L Word. And she lost her mind.
Oh my God, she almost started crying.
She was literally screaming. But not only that, there is a lovely couple couple being the operative word, they do a podcast called Help, I'm Gay. It's the Gay Woman channel on YouTube, and that's their podcast title on Spotify. Shout out, because Joyce didn't realise that they're engaged.
Oh, well, I didn't even know they were together. I need to pay more attention.
Well, no, because I didn't know they were together until I saw the engagement picture, like, right, whatever it was, a few months ago. For context, they are two filmmakers who make YouTube videos and now they have a podcast. They've always explained themselves as best friends, like from high school. Everyone's always been like, are you together? And they've always joked about it, but they've always been like, no, we're just friends. They've always just said it. And then all of a sudden they were like 16 years together and now for a lifetime. Now they're getting married.
Literal insanity.
And Joyce didn't know, and she follows them on Instagram and just had like a little moment where she was like, wah.
Honestly, because I mean, to me at least, the Gay Woman channel and Pillow Talk, yeah, that was so formative for me,
yeah,
when
me
I was
too.
A teenager.
So formative.
I loved their videos. I watched them all the time.
Yeah, and that led me to other projects like Carmilla, which we may talk about in a future episode. Mm-hmm. But like so many of those short form web series,
yeah,
was so instrumental to my coming out experience, my journey of sexuality. Yeah. It's nice that you feel the same. I don't think we've ever talked about
we've
that
never
before.
Talked about them. I think because for me, they kind of disappeared after like my teenage years. I never watched them anymore.
Yeah.
I still followed them on Instagram, apparently, which I just found out.
Yeah.
But it's really funny because literally a month ago, I just randomly thought of them and watched a couple of videos from before. Yeah. And now you bring them up and tell me that they're engaged, and I'm literally mind blown.
But that's ridiculous because I did exactly the same thing. I refound them a couple of months ago. The algorithm must have pushed something because like I saw a video come up on YouTube and I was like, oh yeah, I wonder what they're up to now.
Maybe people saw their Insta posts that they were getting engaged and their videos were getting traction because of that.
Tech girlies.
I love it. She's a STEM girly now.
Yeah.
I don't even know Dean.
Shout out to Sarah and Adriana of the Help I'm Gay podcast and Pillow Talk.
The Gay Woman channel.
Oh, bless them both to bits.
I think I'm gonna binge watch their videos tonight.
Hell yeah. I'm gonna shout them out on everything.
I love it.
If they somehow listen to this, big love and thank you.
Yes.
Okay, well, on that lovely note, shall we discuss God's Own Country?
Yes,
by
we shall.
Directed by Francis Lee. Do summarize.
God's Own Country is set on a farm in West Yorkshire and follows the character of John Saxby. He is the son of a farmer, lives together with his nan, grandmother, and his father, who is ill and can't really perform his tasks as a farmer anymore. So John has kind of been forced into this life really early on, kind of drops into the real world, and he has a really hard time finding his place, and he struggles a lot. He has a drinking problem, and the most poignant thing of his character at the start, at least, is that he completely rejects any form of intimacy or real connections with people. He's completely secluded himself from relationships in any way, any form. That's not really a summary. That's me already going into his character. But yeah, so everything changes basically for John when they hire a farmhand, a Romanian man called Jorge.
Jorge.
Is it George? No, it's Jorge.
Yeah, and he's like, is it George then? In his Yorkshire accent.
Yeah, and then everything kind of changes for him. Falling for this beautiful Romanian farm boy.
Oh, I've already got chills.
So,
I think obviously Johnny is played by Josh O'Connor, who you may know from The Crown and other such things. And then there's Gheorghe is played by Alec Secarinu. And then you've also got Gemma Jones and Ian Hart, who are quite prominent British actors. So it's got a great cast. I think it was funded by the BFI as well.
Yeah. We should note that Francis Lee was in the industry for a very long time before he started directing as an actor.
Yeah.
So he probably already had a lot of connections in there to get such great actors in his debut as well.
That's a very good point.
Mm.
I love the feel of this film. I don't know if you agree. It's just like the beautiful rolling hills of Yorkshire, like envelop the whole film, and it's just all about existing in this small rural village town up north. And I think you get the sense immediately that Johnny feels like he's left behind. He has to take on the family business. He has to take on the family farm, stop it from basically running into the ground because his father's unwell. He has to do all of the grunt work, all of the manual labour himself. He has to go and sell the stock, the cattle and the animals that he's got. He has to do the lambing and he has to do the repairs all by himself. But he's bitter and lazy, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, he's just living this monotonous existence. And there's this particular scene where he bumps into a girl from school. And you see that all of them have just gone off to uni, but he's the one that's been left there.
Yeah.
And you just kind of get that sense of like his life and his potential has just been ground to a halt. So it really is kind of like a personal journey of self-acceptance away from self-loathing, I guess.
Yeah. And when he meets that friend, it also becomes clear that he used to be like a fun and cheery guy.
Yeah.
Always up for a good time and kind of also apparently accepting of his sexuality.
Yeah, he's just kind of retreated about it. Into yeah. himself. Yeah.
And he's completely become a shell of what he used to be.
Mm.
And his friends don't really get that. But he also doesn't really allow them into his life anymore.
Yeah, he doesn't let anyone in, does he? Because obviously he has like... Well, he turns to alcohol. He's very reliant on alcohol. There's lots of scenes of him just like cracking open a beer or having a pint at the pub. Like just kind of shoveling food into his mouth, like without really giving much thought to what he's doing. Like just kind of grunts at his granny every so often. And she basically is running around cleaning all his clothes. And then also, as you were saying, he just kind of has a bunch of sexual encounters with men that don't mean anything, but he doesn't let anyone connect with him.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, well, this is depressing.
It's like, it's one thing to not kiss the person you're sleeping with, but he doesn't even let them talk.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally to that level. Like, it's just, well, okay, the words I wrote down for this are not appropriate for the podcast, but it's just, like, purely, like...
carnal.
Yes. Like... there's just nothing there, no intimacy, no connection, which, I mean, it shows really well how he is as a character at the start of the film, and then what happens after just gets a lot more meaning because of that, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. I think there was a particular moment towards the start where he goes to a like a farm animal auction. I don't know the exact term. I'm not a farmer. I'm sorry. But he has an encounter with a man at the auction, and then he comes back, and one of the cows has given birth to a male calf, but it was a breech birth, and his father didn't have the strength to do it himself. So basically, because he took so long, his father was like, well, it's because of you, it's died. We could have reared that up and sold it for loads. That would have really helped us, kind of thing. So it kind of associates like him giving into his like lusts and passions with a kind of guilt that he needs to be solely focused on the farm.
Yeah,
but he is a though, isn't he? Like,
oh, he really
I feel
is.
Bad for him, but he doesn't help himself.
Oh,
he's
God.
Just so grumpy. Like when Gyorgy arrives, he's like so horrible to him.
Oh.
Doesn't give him the time of day.
Is literally being
calls him something really derogatory as well, with like, which is just like A, remotely not true, and B, like, don't use that language.
Yeah, he's just being like very typically like just being a bigot, really, for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Kind of pushing away people before they even get anywhere close to him. Just immediately setting a barrier of no one can enter my world.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he is a shit. Like at the start of the film, right away we see him come home, or like we see the first shot of this film is him throwing up in the toilet in the morning.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
because he just drinks himself into oblivion and just throws up all the time.
Yeah, that one, you know, that one scene when he wakes up in a, like, I don't even know where he was sleeping, on a field somewhere.
Yeah,
and he just wakes up and vomits right away.
Yeah, he tried to get home and just passed out.
Yeah, like in the taxi.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And the taxi just kind of left him on the
on the door.
I mean, what's he supposed to do? Like
on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So that's how we get to know John.
Yeah.
But you also see, you very much see that he's a product of his environment, like his family. Dynamic is just awful.
It's just emotionless.
Yeah, because... emotionless, and all they do is nag, and they're always disappointed in him. Yeah. Everything he does is wrong. His dad is clearly frustrated with his own disease, but also frustrated that he has to leave it to his son. Yeah, the grandma's.
You really feel for this family because you're literally like, there's no one else to help.
Yeah. It's like really bleak just from the start. So it is understandable why he's in this position, and that something has to change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So Gheorghe, I guess, he's from Romania, and he's hired as extra help for the lambing season, basically because Johnny can't do the lambing on his own. And he doesn't stay in the house. He stays in a caravan that they've kind of set up for his accommodation. Because, I mean, there's not enough space in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But also you're just like, oh, man.
It looks so rough.
Having to put him in, like, such a scratty caravan.
Yeah.
And so basically the ewes, the female sheep, have moved away from the main part of the farm. And then Johnny basically hasn't repaired part of the boundary wall of the farm so that the sheep can escape. It's basically decided by Granny and Dad that Johnny and Gheorghe should spend several days camping nearer to the animals, like further up their land, like up a hill. Their land is stretched over like quite a few acres, isn't it?
Yeah.
Quite a few fields.
Yeah.
And then they basically camp right at the top, like, and beautiful, beautiful views of the Yorkshire valleys, Yorkshire hills.
This is why I wrote down that this movie is Brokeback Mountain in Yorkshire.
It is yeah. Brokeback Mountain in Yorkshire. But this is a real test for both of them, because Gheorghe clearly doesn't like Johnny. Johnny's just like, for God's sake, like, I don't want to be doing this. But he's so like, he's just a bit repulsive. Like, he'll just like spit and like, just, yeah.
Just swallow his food.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. But basically this is the start of the journey, because one of the ewes gives birth to a sheep that's unconscious. And Johnny's just like, oh, just let it die, like, it's just nature. But Gheorghe's like, no, let's care for it. He manages to resuscitate it really gently and then care for it. And then Johnny's like, oh, interesting.
That was such a cute moment. Yeah, when John just looks at Gheorghe with, like, he has this, like, interest. They're amazing actors. This interest in his eyes, or, like, this, like, fascination, or just kind of like his attention is drawn. I love that, because he has such a hard time making eye contact or just looking at anyone.
He just doesn't connect with anyone, film. Does he? And
then, no, his head is down the entire time. He doesn't look at anyone.
But that's the beginning of it, in a way, isn't it? Because that's when Johnny is given his first example of gentleness and like tenderness.
Yeah.
Because there's a real dichotomy between aggression and tenderness, and this is when he's kind of first witnesses it.
Yeah.
Because then they have a fight not long after this, where Gheorghe basically tackles Johnny to the ground and is like, "Don't call me that name again."
Yeah.
I'm not gonna repeat. He basically, because he spends the whole film just like taking it, and then all of a sudden he's like, "Don't talk to me like that."
Yeah.
And shows aggression. Because that's the only way Johnny understands that what he's doing is wrong. Like, he has to be, like,
yeah,
physically fought, which is so bad.
I know. Yeah, a little bit after that fight, there's a moment where they're rebuilding the wall together, right? The boundary wall. And Johnny picks up a stone and seriously, like, hurts his hand.
Mm.
And he just kind of wants to shake it off and whatever. Gheorghe tells him that no, he needs to take care of it, otherwise it will get infected with disease.
Yeah.
And he kind of takes Johnny's hand and looks at it, and he's very caring and it's like such a sweet little moment. And John just kind of lets it happen. And it really shows that for the first time he's kind of able to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
In like a very,
that's so true.
Like, he's seeing your Gheorghe with the little lamb. That's the first thing. Then you have Gheorghe tackling him and showing aggression. And I think having those two things so close together kind of shows Johnny that the nuance of having connections with people.
Very true.
And
kind
of letting the possibility of letting that in become a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, definitely. I think you're right. I think as well with, because in a lot of those scenes, there's Johnny is a man of few words, right?
Mm-hmm. Very few words.
Very few words. He just kind of was like, eh. Just kind of. Yeah. So with those scenes, you get the physical aggression, but then also the physical, like Gyoge demonstrates tenderness, and Johnny allows himself to be cared for in that moment. And there's not really that much dialogue. There's very long pauses within the scene takes, and you really, like, it's palpable, like, what they're thinking and feeling, even though they're not expressing it verbally. And that's a theme that's carried on consistently throughout the film, which I like a lot.
Yes. So
we've got to get to that bit.
This is the Brokeback Mountain bit I'm talking about, because it gives me the exact same vibe. It's just pure animal lust and aggression.
Yeah.
Like
carnal vibes. Well, they start fighting in the mud, and then they just start doing bits.
Men, this is addressed to you. Like, what's the issue? Please make me understand, right? Because it's like the most men thing I've ever seen. Like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like the most men thing, because it's like this weird thing about fighting and aggression and violence combined.
It's so Shakespearean,
isn't
it? Like the war level aggression and lust combined with like passion and sex, and
oh my god,
so intertwined in each other, and that you just see that on the hill,
yeah,
on the hillside. And yeah, it is very Brokeback Mountain.
No talking, no kissing, nothing. Like, guys, have a little combo.
I know. Tell
me about your day, honey.
Tell me how you're feeling.
Is this okay? Like, no, and look, to each their own. Clearly, like, you can cut the tension when they're like sleeping together, not like that, but just sleeping in the same room together.
Yeah,
and they're like, both of them have their eyes open, but then like not looking at each other. Mm-hmm. You can just tell that there's so much tension.
Yeah.
Ooh. So I mean, was it surprising? No.
No.
Was it welcome? Yeah. It's all right.
Gotta do it for the gays.
Yeah, I didn't mind it.
I thought it was great. I also thought, like, considering the sheer level of nudity and, like, carnal lust, it was very tasteful.
It was.
Like, even though it was kind of rough, like, they were both vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because they were outside as well, and naked.
They were outside, and it's actually Johnny... Sorry, because I don't know another word, but like pleasuring Gyoge,
mm-hmm,
instead of like the other way around, which we've seen before with Johnny when he's having these meaningless encounters. Mm-hmm. It's usually the other way around, or it's just, it's actually like he's giving pleasure to Gyoge.
Yeah.
Which is a complete 180 from what he was doing before.
Yeah.
So even though there's no intimacy yet in that role, in the way that we get it later. And he's still doing the same things where he won't let the guy kiss him,
mm-hmm,
and he won't talk. He's still doing something else. He's still being vulnerable and actually really wanting someone for who they are instead of just wanting the sex.
Damn.
That's the vibe I got. And also, definitely, visually, that was a really beautiful scene. When they're like lying on this hill and it's like dawn, like morning... And it's like blue, green.
It looks
outside.
Cold as hell, though.
Oh, it really does. Ooh.
And they're like covered in mud.
No. Yeah. It's very men. Like, this is what I'm saying. It's all men. Nothing about this is appealing to me as a woman. Very animalistic.
It is, yeah. But then he doesn't even want to acknowledge it after.
Yeah.
But then they share cigarettes after. Like, because they have a... they're sat by a campfire and they share cigarettes, and it's just kind of like there's no speech in the scene, but it's just like a quiet silent acknowledgement about what they did, and they can connect.
Which, thank God, because like you said before that, Johnny doesn't even acknowledge it. He's silent all day. And I wrote this note down while I was watching it in all caps saying, men are horrible with their emotions. What the fuck?
We need to encourage men to be vulnerable and talk about their feelings. Oh, it's very important.
I couldn't stand it. I was literally like, dude, just say something. Just say something, my guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the campfire, with the cigarettes.
Yeah. But and then that night, Johnny comes onto him again. But he comes onto him aggressively, like what happened before. But then Gheorghe's like, no. But then basically shows him that intimacy can be gentle and can be loving and tender. And it's such a contrast. It's such a contrast to the scene before where it was like, where you had this really intense thing it was still like passionate, but in a different way. Mm-hmm. It was almost loving. And then you're like, oh, so men can be gentle and expressive with their bodies.
Yeah. I love the scene. They're like finally, like Gheorghe is like touching him in like in the nicest way, like very gentle and tender, like you say. But then everybody focusing and taking his time. And then Johnny is the one that kisses Gheorghe. He's the one that takes a step to kiss.
Because he feels safe.
I know.
It's so nice because Johnny's probably never experienced that because he's not let anyone do that.
Yeah.
So it's the first time that he actually feels seen by someone in that context and in that moment. And it's emotional. I thought that was really moving.
Yeah, me too. I think that was one of the most beautiful scenes in the film.
Yeah. But then Johnny kind of reaches out after that point. Yep. He says, you can come stay in the house. But Gheorghe's like, no.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to set some type of boundary, but also he'd have to share Johnny's room, and that's, you know.
I wouldn't want to sleep in Johnny's room, let's be real.
Well, because Martin, Johnny's dad, and then Granny Lady, obviously would then cotton on to what's going on, so.
Yeah.
That's kind of a boundary that's set.
Gheorghe seems a lot more, like, rational about these things, too, and clear-headed.
Because Johnny wants to go, like, now he's felt it, he wants it all the time.
Exactly.
Goes from naught to 1,000, like.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, I think Johnny is about, 19 years old, maybe? Because his friends have gone to uni, but I think they just went to uni.
Yeah, maybe.
So he's really young. This is probably, like, the first time he's ever felt love, too.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think he's more than 21.
No. And Gheorghe is definitely older.
Yeah.
Not excessively, but he's definitely a bit older.
A bit older, yeah.
So I think he just knows more, too. And he's not that, like, he can handle the emotions of it a lot better.
Yeah.
Like, place them better. But no, Johnny just wants it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, Johnny, when you have your first moment like that, it's understandable that he's like, I want to feel good all the time. I want to connect with someone.
It's finally. Yeah. It's so endearing to see him so happy and like smiling. Yeah.
I know. And he looks nice when he smiles. Yeah.
And not excessively drinking. Drinking excessively. Mm. They're still drinking, but not in the way that he was doing before.
Yeah.
Exactly. He's found something now. He's found some meaning in his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's very sweet.
But I really admire this film's ability to shift, like, not only plot, but also expectations of characters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of this happens and it's lovely and wonderful and you're like, oh, that's great. But we're halfway through the film, so where's this going? And then Johnny's dad, Martin, suffers another stroke, which leaves him even more compromised than he was before. Like, now he can't walk or talk. And so then Johnny realizes that the entire responsibility of the farm now falls to him.
Yeah.
And that's hard. Like, suddenly you're only, well, first of all, your dad can't speak anymore. That's really devastating. But then also realizing that you've got the entire weight of the family business. Because those types of farms, like, they've been in families for generations.
Yeah.
They've been in families for a long, long time. So to see it struggling and failing is really sad. And then feeling that weight on your shoulders must be so hard. So that's when he asks Gyorge to stay on with him. And it's intense.
Yeah.
It's really intense. But to see Gyorge being there for him as well is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so a bit later we're in the pub again with the both of them. And Tony kind of asks Gyorge to stay on kind of indefinitely.
Yes.
Yeah. And then Gyorge, because he's rational and he's a bit older, he starts thinking about that in like a practical way.
Yeah.
And
which is sensible.
Of course. I mean, it's a really big deal too.
Yeah, it's a new thing. And then they're going to be living and working together 24/7.
Exactly. Like,
they've just met. It's kind of...
And yeah, Gyorge is also kind of saying that the way they run the farm needs to change, kind of go with the times and all that. And Johnny seems to be taking it all a bit too... He's having a hard time taking it in. And I think it's multiple things. It's, first of all, it's getting really serious.
Yeah.
But also, he's just kind of too in this, like, bliss to think about stuff like that. And he doesn't want to accept it, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's kind of having a hard time with it. He basically takes it as a rejection, which it really isn't.
Yeah, it's clearly not what he meant. But obviously, when you open yourself up to be vulnerable, and then like he feels like he's being stamped on, which obviously yeah. isn't the case, but you can see why he feels rejected.
Yeah. But yeah, he gets pissed drunk again.
Classic.
Can barely walk, and then his uni that friend that he had that went to uni is there with her uni mates, and he knows that one of them is gay as well. And then just, I don't know, it's very sad. It made me feel so like sick, just like so sad.
I know,
because it's so self-destructive.
It is, and you can so understand why, but you're just like, no. And then Gyorge's face is just like, oh,
it's horrible. But yeah, he has a sexual encounter with someone else in the toilets while Gyorge is literally getting spit on by this man that's racist. And
so gross.
Then Gyorge runs away to the toilet and finds out about John because he's in the toilet. And runs out. And it's just so heartbreaking. Because I feel so bad for both of them. Like Gyorge, obviously, he just is so sad. But John is literally just destructed the best thing he has because he has such a hard time dealing with his emotions and feelings and communicating, and just keeps self-destructing. So sad. Oh
it's
my god.
So sad. I literally was like, no, what are you doing? Because it was like, I just was like, is this how it ends? I can't have it end sad.
I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, then.
Then.
It literally the most depressing, like, aftermath of that. Gyorge leaves him right away. Literally, just by the time John's back, he's packed and ready to go. And he's gone. And he's just gone.
Meanwhile, during all of this, I was never really sure what Johnny's gran, like what her impression was of it all. Because there's quite clearly a shift when they start being more close. She can kind of see it. And she's kind of like doing the washing, and she stumbles off across a couple of things where she's like, oh, so, okay, they are together. And there's this moment where she's ironing where she cries.
Yeah.
And it is like really heartbreaking, but I couldn't really place why she was crying.
I think she's crying because her son's in the hospital and just had a stroke.
Okay, well, okay.
Fine. Yeah, because she's ironing her son's pajamas. The dad,
oh, I see.
Because she's bringing them to the hospital.
Because it's right after she like picks up his laundry and finds some things that kind of gives it away.
Yeah.
But I guess it's just kind of the weight of everything hits her all at once.
I think so, because she's holding these pajamas and she like smells them.
Yeah,
and then she starts crying.
It's so it must be so hard, like caring for your child, like your fully grown adult, like having a fully grown adult having that moment, but it's your child and you're having to look after their child.
Yeah.
Like it must have, like, it's so much for anyone to deal with. So that's understandable.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could never really place where she felt about the sexuality thing.
It's never really brought up. You can see that the dad doesn't like it.
Because it's very unspoken, though, isn't it?
There's a scene earlier on when Gheorghe, I'm going to have a hard time with this until the end, Gheorghe and Johnny are, like, kind of fooling around in the tractor. Like, not sexually, but they're playing.
They're just having fun. They're messing around.
And obviously, this is not how Johnny is with anyone. So the dad sees it, and he has this very, like, concerned, but, like, not in a good way, look on his face. So I think they know, but I think, like you say, it's an unspoken thing. And I don't think necessarily that they like it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's my impression of it, at least.
Yeah, it's. I'm glad that they don't make it explicit, because I think that would change the whole trajectory of the film.
Yeah, it would just be about something else.
It's nice that it's not just about a gay issue, but actually just like a sweet relationship at the forefront of one man's like journey to liking himself again.
So how
does the film end, Joyce? Tell us.
Wait, before you get to that point, the whole bit when Gheorghe is gone, like I said, I mean, it's sad.
Yes. Yeah.
But this is the time when Johnny gets to rebuild, or like at least find peace with his relationship with his dad.
Yeah, very true.
And that was, I mean, such a beautiful part of the film too.
Yes,
because you get, I mean, obviously his heart being broken like that, I think, has really sobered him up.
Yeah.
Not like literally, but also literally, but mostly like figuratively.
It's character building. Everyone needs a first heartbreak, don't they?
Honestly, his Dark Night of the Soul was actually pretty healing for him.
But it's, you're right though, it's great because I think the whole time his father and grandmother have wanted him to take ownership and step up and like be that leading figure. So by the end of the film, he speaks to his dad and says, you know, I'm staying on the farm, but it has to be on my terms. Like, I want to run things my way.
Yeah.
But that's what his dad's wanted all along. He's been pushing him to that point.
Yeah.
So that's nice that he steps up and is, you know, is the head of the family in a way.
And they kind of unspokenly find this middle ground between them.
Mm.
And that kind of this peace just starts existing.
Yeah.
And it's really, really nice to see.
That's lovely.
Yeah, and then he gets on a bus to go see Gheorghe,
because he finds out Gheorghe is working in Scotland somehow,
working on a potato farm.
Yeah,
good for him. Potatoes, hell yeah,
good for him. But he needs to be with Johnny,
of course.
But they reconcile, don't they? It's quite a sweet reconciliation.
It's honestly, you don't. I feel like I didn't know where it was going. I didn't know if it was going to turn out well.
I know it could have. Well, the way they were speaking, even in the scene, I felt like it could have gone either way. And then they just have that moment of clarity, and reconnect. And it's beautiful. Aww.
Yeah.
That's what I said when I was watching it.
Aww.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. I think the ending is excellent because two things happen.
Mm.
Well, three things. First, he makes peace with his dad.
Yeah.
Then secondly, he makes peace with himself. And then thirdly, he makes peace with Gheorghe.
Oh,
the way he makes peace with himself is that you can literally physically see his struggle to open up and show emotion and talk.
You see the weight lift from his shoulders, don't you?
Yeah.
Like, he carries himself differently, even physically.
Yeah.
It's beautiful acting by Josh O'Connor.
He's so good. He's literally there standing there with Gheorghe and he doesn't know what to say, and they're basically walking away from each other, and then you can literally see the pain in his face trying to like bring it out and get to that part of himself, and he turns around and he actually just speaks and tells him what he wants, tells him straight up what he wants, how he feels, and it's that in itself is just a complete celebration for him.
Yeah.
And then he also gets the man. So well done. Well done, Johnny.
Well done, Johnny.
Takes him home.
A win, win, and a win.
Exactly.
And then Gheorghe moves into the house and they get rid of the caravan and they live happily ever after.
It's
on their
so
farm.
Cute.
Just two guys running their own farm. I want the sequel where they have babies.
Can I have lambs? Just lambs.
lambs and babies.
What a good ending. Like, there's so much bleak stuff in this film that you just don't expect it to have such a great ending.
I really thought it was going to go another way when I first watched it.
I was expecting death.
Yeah, I was like, his dad's going to die. It's going to be really depressing. Heartbreak. Mourning. No. I mean, yes, it is. His dad is very unwell and that is very sad. But also, they all reconnect as a family and then he still gets his man.
He still gets his man.
10 out of 10.
You know what? I think, obviously, I mean, a lot of things are just bleak in it, but I think also you kind of get that eeriness because if, sorry, just me maybe, Wuthering Heights is set in like the same type of setting. And when the film like opened up and you just see the landscapes, it reminded me of Andrea Arnold's Wuthering Heights from 2015. I don't know if you've seen that one. But it's like this, it just gave me the same vibe. And so that vibe of like, oh, something bad's about to happen.
Beautiful. I love that with English films though, I feel like. Even like The Banshees of Inisherin did it.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Would recommend. I feel like all UK films and Irish films do it. Where like films will just start with the rolling hills and like a romantic landscape. But it's kind of grey, it's kind of bleak, but it's gorgeous.
But see, this is a thing too.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ooh, Jorge accepts that and like loves it and like admires it. And Johnny just doesn't have an eye for it at all. He's so used to it.
I think when you grow up in a small rural town, like you don't appreciate it in the same way until you see it through fresh eyes.
Yeah. So he just opens up so much in our little Johnny.
Beautiful.
Love it.
What a lovely film. Do you have any final thoughts?
I love this film. So the first time I watched it was about 4 years ago. And I remember liking it. Like, I do remember enjoying it. But watching it now, I think I just liked it so much more. I don't know why.
It's gorgeous.
So good.
I want to watch it again.
And everything. The cinematography, the acting is phenomenal.
Yeah. It just ticks all the boxes, doesn't it?
The commitment to silent moments and long shots.
Yeah.
I love that. Because it works so well.
Takes its time.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like a slow film at all.
It's not even that long.
It's an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, perfect.
But it doesn't feel slow, but there's so many moments in there that just take a while. But in the best timing ever.
I like that about Francis Lee films, though. I feel like with these two, he doesn't mind just taking his time.
Yeah.
Got to get the shot right. And I rate that so hard.
Hell yeah.
On that note, shall we commence talking about our next film?
Oh my god, I have so much even to say about this film before we even get into it.
Okay.
Like the whole history of this film.
What are we talking about?
Em and I.
The 2020 film of Francis Lee. This is the last film that he did. He's currently working on another film, which apparently is a queer horror, which, hello. That sounds great. Definitely going to be talking about that when it comes out.
The lead actor in it is the same one as God's Own Country.
No way!
But Josh O'Connor?
Josh O'Connor!
Yeah. Well, he's on the poster, so I assume he's the lead. He's the only one being announced yet.
Okay. Rightio. I'm into it. Happy days. I love Josh O'Connor. So, Ammonite.
So.
2020 film, lesbian madness. Kate Winslet, Saoirse Ronan.
I have so much to say. Like, so much.
Right.
Before we even get into the film.
Yes.
sorry, but I just need you all to know how important this was for me, okay? When this film was announced back in, I don't know, 2019, maybe 2018 even, okay? Mm. When this film was announced, I think I almost passed out, dropped to the floor, fainted.
Because of Kate Winslet, right?
Because Kate Winslet was going to play a lesbian.
We all know how much you love Titanic.
Look, I think I have talked about this exact same thing before on the podcast, but I just want to make it clear, okay? I've seen Heavenly Creatures. She has played a lesbian before.
She has.
And I love that. I love that for her. And I love that for me. But I fell in love with Kate Winslet after Heavenly Creatures. Mm-hmm. A bit older. Look, I like an older woman, okay? Kate Winslet, for me, is the number one woman on this planet, okay?
It's always the Kates.
Yeah. So when I found out she was going to play a lesbian, I didn't even care who the other girl was. Saoirse Ronan? Okay, go off. Pop off, girl. I don't care.
But see, I love Saoirse Ronan.
See, so this film is great for both of us, right?
Well, I don't love her... like you love Kate. Okay, I just think she's a phenomenal actress.
She is phenomenal. So is Kate.
But
both Oscar winners.
Yeah.
Academy Award.
But I did think it was an interesting pairing though.
We'll get into that.
Yeah,
we'll for sure get into that.
Cool.
So yeah, I saw the announcement, passed out, mm-hmm. super excited, been counting down the days, and for the London Film Festival, I went to the screening.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes, I did.
Wait, I don't think we knew each other at that point, because it was...
No, we did. This was the year that I moved to London for uni.
Oh, yeah.
But this was beginning of October, so we just met.
I seem to remember a vague conversation about Ammonite
that
we had one time.
Yeah.
But I think you were still mad at me that I hadn't seen Portrait at that point.
Oh, probably. But yeah.
What a throwback.
I was literally quaking in my seat.
Quaking in my boots.
In
my Doc Martens.
Oh, yeah. And this was back when you had to like get like a thermometer pointed at your head before you went to a screening.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I went to see it for the film festival. And... it was the most disappointing day of my life, honey.
What was your reaction when you came out? Were you just like...
So the most awkward thing happened to me, but also by me. It was my fault. But I was so... I just couldn't believe my eyes. Because for me, and we'll get into this, for me, seeing Saoirse and Kate... And Kate looks so old in this film. She looks so old in this
film. They make her look rough.
Rough. To see them both together, it just did not work for me. Like, to me, they had absolutely 0.0% chemistry, and it felt like a mother-daughter situation.
I agree. And I didn't like that at all.
I was so uncomfortable in the cinema, because obviously that's not what I wanted. But also, this cinema was packed.
Oh, no.
And during the sex scene...
Oh, I had that we'll talk about later. I had that when I went to see The Favourite.
During the sex scene of Ammonite, I, as the only person in the entire room, mind you, at the age of 23 or something, how old was I? 22. I just started like giggling, but it was like a throat giggle. Like it came from my chest and I just couldn't keep it in. It was like, like it was literally coming from my chest and I just couldn't keep it in. Like, you know when your face gets really hot and you just have to let out sound?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
That's so funny.
As the only person in the room, I just started giggling because
oh my god.
Because I just couldn't see them together. So seeing them have like sex.
Yuck.
I was like, huh? And it's just so bad. Like, I'm so ashamed of this because I'm sure everyone thought that I was like this 16-year-old girl that snuck into the screening.
Oh my god, lesbians are kissing.
Oh my god, sex.
You were just there like,
I was just there like, I cannot believe what I'm watching. But anyway, that's my history with the film.
I think it is interesting to consider how Francis Lee portrays men in a relationship versus women in a relationship, for sure.
I agree.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that when we start talking about the sex scenes.
Why don't we jump into it? Why don't you give us a little summary of Ammonite?
Okay.
The romantic drama.
Yes. Do you want to take this one?
I can. I'll jump in because you've seen it more recently than I.
Yep.
But so Ammonite itself is inspired by the life of a real person, British paleontologist Mary Anning. Unconfirmed that she was a lesbian. So interesting.
Sure, Jan.
Yeah. There's no evidence.
There never is. It's fossilized.
It's always with these female, well, it's with any queer person in history. They never married and had children and lived a celibate life, but they were best friends with their childhood best friend for 40 years, and they lived together and shared a bed, best friend.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. This is like Emily Dickinson with her love letters to Sue. They were like really, really close friends.
Yeah, they were best buds.
Anyway.
Yeah. But so it's described as a speculative romantic film.
Okay.
They can't come out and be like, Mary Anning is a lesbian. But also, Mary Anning
is dead, so do we care?
Mary Anning is actually a very key contributor to British science. But very underrated, of course, because science was a man's world in the 1840s. She was a fossil collector and a paleontologist. She was very, very renowned, and men basically took credit for her work. This ammonite is a type of fossil, very common in Lyme Regis still, in Dorset, where she lives. She basically had to care for her mother, who,
is
Granny.
Yeah.
From God's Own Country.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
Recycling.
Welcome back, Gemma Jones.
Love it.
We miss
Plays,
you.
Once again, a very sad mother.
Yeah, very, very sad. Longing, if you will. But basically, she is the only one to look after her mum.
Yeah.
And men basically take credit for her work. She sends off the fossils. And yeah, it is what it is. But then Q. Saoirse Ronan, Charlotte Murchison, sent... How would you explain this? Because basically, Charlotte's husband is keen to learn off Mary.
Yeah.
And but then is also like, my wife is unwell. Can she convalesce with you? Well, she's staying in a hotel nearby. He basically drops his wife on Mary Anning, who's like, I'm not a nanny. Like,
yeah.
And then, yeah, Charlotte is very like, she's basically like,
That's
she's
so
sickly from the city of London. She's gone to Dorset to just kind of breathe in the sea air for a bit.
Well, it's not like it was her choice, but she joined.
Well, yeah, it's not her choice. And she's salty because she's just been dropped there by her husband.
Salty. Good choice for word for the seaside.
Oh my God, it all comes together, you see? But he just leaves her there and goes off traveling on a ship.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, babes. Hate you, and then is basically left to be with Mary, and chaos ensues from there. Roderick Murchison is the husband's name. He was a geologist.
Yes. Yeah, from the scenes we get with Charlotte and her husband, it's very clear that this marriage was set up in some way.
Oh, yeah.
There's no love whatsoever. We kind of find out, or we have to... at least conclude from some of the conversations they have, that Charlotte lost a child.
Yeah,
probably a miscarriage.
Yeah. Very common.
Absolutely.
In that time.
No love between her and her husband. There's just this one time, so sad, where they're in bed together and Charlotte just wants to cuddle.
Mm.
And he's like, no, I don't want another child at this time. Or like, it's no time for children right now. I was literally like, okay, dude. So that's their marriage. Then obviously Mary's life is just
sad.
She's very passionate about her work, but clearly, yeah.
How they portray Lyme Regis is really interesting, because when you think of Lyme Regis and like growing up in the UK, a lovely, sunny Dorset town, it's like a tourist hotspot and fossils. I've never been, but it looks great. But this film presents it so differently. It's cold, it's wet, it's rainy, it's bleak, it's foggy. Like, it's the complete opposite of what you would expect it to be.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of wandering along the seascape, picking up rocks, looking after her mum, and you're like, oh. Like, again, it kind of captures that rural sense of location, but also isolation.
Yeah.
Of, especially of Mary, her life just is directionless.
Yeah.
Well, and this is the thing as well. She's very smart. She's very intelligent. She has her shop. And is clearly very respected. But she's stuck. And you're like, no, please. It's worse when it's a woman.
Because
all that potential is lost. Like, think of all the women who couldn't go to university and couldn't do XYZ because of just of their gender.
Yeah.
Like all that potential and intelligence was just lost. And it's really sad. Then Charlotte turns up. Basically, she gets left with Mary because Roderick is like, but she's basically won't get out of bed.
He calls it light melancholy.
Yeah, well, she's depressed as hell, right? So then she's been sent there to convalesce, and was basically like, look after my wife whilst I bounce to Europe, bye. And Mary is just like, okay, well, if you're paying me, fine.
Yeah.
Reluctantly agrees. So then Charlotte starts going with Mary on her morning beach trips to find rocks. And is really, really salty about it.
Well, they're both pretty salty about it.
Yeah, yeah, very true. To be honest. Also, yes, so what happens is Charlotte goes in the ocean, gets cold, and then gets a fever. Classic.
Mm-hmm.
Gentle woman gets one breath of cold and it instantly falls sick. And Dr. Lieberson appears. George.
So we're welcome seeing back.
The same actors. Welcome back, Alec.
Yeah.
Love it. So fun. He basically prescribes her bed rest and says to Mary, you must be her bedtime nurse.
Yeah, you need to care for her because you're a woman, Mary.
Bedside nurse. I said bedtime nurse. I meant bedside nurse. Well, yeah. Oh, then so she basically goes to a friend, Elizabeth.
A friend.
Fiona Shaw. Hi, Queenie.
Love. Lesbian. Every time I see Fiona Shaw.
Icon.
Every time
I love
see
especially
her.
When I see her in a film led by a queer woman. Colette, which we talked about on our last long form Gay Actually episode.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't listened.
Love
yeah,
her.
So you, yeah, she goes to buy, she's like a pharmacist type, like back in 1840s, whatever a female pharmacist was called.
A witch. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, and you get the sense very quickly that they were a thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, Mary's gay. Yeah. And Elizabeth's like, come in for a visit. Come in and catch up with me. And Mary's like, no.
Mary's like,
again,
not.
She won't let herself feel, much like Johnny in God's Own Country. She won't let herself be vulnerable. She won't let herself show any type of struggle.
Yeah.
She's just, everyone's like, Mary, you're dealing with so much. Let's help. Let me know how you're feeling. And she's like, no.
No. Yeah.
And that doesn't really change.
This is also the thing. Like, first of all, they make Kate Winslet look very old and grey. But also, she never smiles in this film. We'll get to a specific part where she does smile. But she never smiles in this film.
She's miserable AF. And miserable. I don't blame her. But also, I'm like, like, when she does smile, I'm like, oh, yay, no. She's feeling things, she's happy. Then it's quickly like, Kate Winslet frown. Like, no. No. But anyway, what happens next?
Oh, yeah, she's basically caring for Charlotte. She's getting better, it's great. Charlotte tries to kind of engage in conversation with Mary quite unsuccessfully. This is really a lot like God's Own Country. The dynamic
yeah,
at first,
that's so true now we're talking
up.
About it,
But here, I mean, strikingly, Charlotte is a younger one. She's a lot younger than Mary.
Mm.
We don't get their ages, but I would say like 20 years probably, 40-20 or 25-45.
Yeah.
At least 20 years.
Yeah.
They're both consenting adults, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, valid. Okay, yeah.
Her husband's
great.
More of a creep than Mary.
Yeah, valid. And they did know each other in real life. They were friends. They exchanged correspondence, but...
Who?
Charlotte and Mary.
Oh, okay.
IRL.
That kind of real life. I thought you meant the actors. So I was like, okay.
I do think Saoirse Ronan is a phenomenal actress, though. I just think the script wasn't necessarily right for her. Like, she was really good, but I just think, like, it was just such a weird situation. I felt like they struggled to have chemistry because of the weird script.
Yeah, there's a lot of caring, and there's also this caring in God's Own Country that we talked about that literally breaks the wall that Johnny has built.
Yeah.
But this care, it's complicated, yeah. I think, because there's love is so nuanced, and like caring is a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think because Frances Lee is not a lesbian,
mm-hmm.
with all due respect, I think the caring that he shows there, like where the love develops through that caring, I think is too motherly.
Yeah.
The way it's written. And I'm not saying that that's not realistic, but I'm saying the way that comes over on screen kind of...
It falls flat.
It falls flat, and it also makes... It also kind of turns that potential chemistry they could have had into a different kind of dynamic.
Mm.
And for me, that was where I was struggling watching this film.
Yeah,
because it felt way too motherly for me.
Yeah. I think once you look past that, it's fine, but you can't really look past it, which is why so many queer women like joke about how Ammonite is.
Yeah, because I really do believe that what they showed was realistic, and that
it's a good film.
Yeah,
fundamentally,
no, and I get that that caring. I'm 100%. I know that that's real.
Yeah,
that kind of caring.
Yeah,
but I just think the way it was done, it just didn't come over that way.
It felt too mummy.
It really felt so, and not in a good way. No, I don't know. It was just, and that dynamic starts when she has that fever, and Mary's taking care of her.
Yeah,
and she even says it to Mary. She even says, "You're taking care of me like a mother," or something like that. Mm. And it just, I'm just having a hard time, to be honest.
I get you
with their dynamic, which is so unfortunate. But anyway, moving on.
Yeah, well, from that point, their, I guess, relationship kind of develops. I would go as far to say it's a slow burn.
Very sober.
A simmer, if you will. But then, like, they're kind of getting to know each other. They're kind of, like, having good chats, good conversation. And it's kind of like you get the sense of Mary's repression. Like, she's pushing down her feelings. Because they go to an evening recital. And Charlotte kind of mingles really well with the town folk. You just get that sense of, oh, because she's married to a guy, like she's immediately accepted and like praised. But Mary, even though she's respected, she's a spinster, so she's not respected in the same way, which is messed up. But you can see kind of Mary feels sad about it, so she leaves early. And Charlotte comes home and finds that Mary has written a lovely romantic poem in her journal. And I'm like, lesbian! Jinx.
Oh my god. Can I also say, before they go to the recital, Charlotte walks down in her dress, her nightgown.
Yeah.
Not her nightgown.
Oh no! It's like, yeah!
Walks down in her dress, and Mary looks at her like she's an absolute snack.
Yeah.
She makes
but
these
it's so
eyes.
Subtle as well.
Oh, and like the Kate corner of her incredible. Mouth, just like, the corners of her mouth just like curl up.
She's just like
a little. Okay. Little sexy smirk. She just looks at her like she's a snack.
Yeah, and it's the first time you're like, Mary, there you are.
Do you remember what the poem says?
No.
Me either.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Oh, they find a really big fossil. That's what happens next.
And it gets sent, Charlie, yeah.
It gets sent to the British Museum.
This is also when Mary starts opening up a bit to Charlotte about her first fossil that she found when she was 11.
Yeah, and it's the same one. It's the same type.
Oh,
maybe it's because she's showing her vulnerability.
I think so. She's just sharing. Yeah. And there's that drawing of the fossil that she made when she was 11. I think she kind of wants to explain that that's a child's drawing, even though it's like good.
Yeah, it's incredible. And you're like, Mary, you're smart as hell.
Yeah.
And you give yourself no credit and you just give all of your things to the British Museum to take credit for anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, after that, what happens, Amber?
Ooh, what happens, Joyce?
I don't know. I didn't squeal yet for this part. Although, okay, they share a lot of intimate moments in between. Lots of looks, staring, which this is just kind of, I think, a residue from Portrait of a Lady on Fire, where looking is everything. The thing that kind of...
Yeah, it's voyeuristic, isn't it? Like, they like to look and be... Yeah, they like to look at each other. They like to gaze upon each other.
So just lots of staring.
Considering it's a male director, I think this part is done well. Like the gaze, it's not like inherently male.
Yeah.
Necessarily. I mean, obviously the camera is male. But
let me get my film theory book. Oh my god.
But I think it wasn't done in like a, like, you know that type of way where men portray queer women on screen. Yeah. It wasn't done like that, in my opinion.
No. It was very intimate.
Yeah.
Instead of like lustful.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't lustful. Yet.
What? So I really want to have a genuine conversation with you about this, because I wonder how you feel about this. Yeah. But this is kind of a revelation I had after watching God's Own Country.
Talk to me.
But this is when we get into their first sexual encounter.
Yeah. Well, they have one and then they have another, yeah, don't they?
Yeah, talk about the first one.
Okay, great.
So this is their first kiss, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how does this, what is Mary washing the dishes or something?
They're cleaning the fossil tools before going to bed, and then Charlotte kisses Mary.
On the cheek first, and then Mary kind of turns around and then they kiss. And I love that part, that was great.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
Once again, I'm just going to say it, for me, they have no chemistry, so that stays the same anyway.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I think that was a very cute first kiss.
Yeah.
And then, I don't even know how much time passed, but basically straight away, Mary and lifts up Charlotte's skirt and whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to get your opinion on this.
Okay.
But do you think that is realistic? Or do you think that is the way, in the same as in God's Own Country, where it's kind of like that aggressive, quick lust, like wanting desire, that's something that's more... because he's a male director, like, he wrote it,
yeah.
that's something that's not quite as realistic.
That's a really good question. I think in some ways it is realistic.
It is our first encounter, though. Like, give that in mind, too. Like,
yeah. I think, considering the context, I don't think either of them are realistic. Because they've got to know each other quite consistently before,
mm-hmm.
right? But then at the same time, oh God, I don't know.
I thought it was quite aggressive in like a jarring way.
Did you think it was realistic?
Either of
them.
God's Own Country, yeah.
Yeah.
Like that was, yeah. I mean, I have no experience in that, but it felt real. Like it felt
the
like...
whole film felt very real.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's something to do with maybe Ammonite being historical, because God's Own Country is contemporary, isn't it?
Right, maybe.
But maybe it's like kind of a degree removed.
Maybe.
But I don't know. I think you're right. Ammonite was not as realistic, and that saddens me.
Hmm. It was jarring when that happened, because that's not how I think about two women.
Well, obviously, yeah, because obviously we're speaking from a very specific perspective. We don't really know, like, the gay male experience, so we're just speaking based on what, like,
very
our perceptions and...
Very true.
And that kind of thing.
But
I think it was better than Ammonite. I mean, I didn't like it. I was like, oh, okay, we're doing this, like, fine.
Yeah, it just, me, it really came out of nowhere. Not that they finally kissed.
I think they should have just left it super fast. The kiss.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Like, it went too fast for me. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen and that's not realistic.
Yeah.
It's just in that setting and kind of like that waiting and that anticipation for that to happen, for then suddenly... it to go from a kiss to like full blown whatever.
Sure, I think
in
I
like
agree with
2
you.
Seconds, I was like, "Oh my goodness!"
It was,
like,
yeah.
Surely not.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, because I think, like, yeah, women can be like, of course, like, women love sex. Women can be passionate and given to desires and that kind of thing. But I don't really know what I'm trying to say. And the tenderness.
But I think they
showed
that.
But the tenderness wasn't there, though.
But it was. There's like this moment where she takes her hand and she holds her hand for a bit, and then.
But why didn't they just leave it at that, though?
What do you mean?
Like, if they just left it at the kiss,
yeah,
and like that beautiful moment, I'd be like, oh, that's really nice.
Exactly.
And then they just
like I feel that they built up that kind of intimacy.
Because I feel like God's Own Country did the aggression and then the tenderness.
Exactly.
Whereas Ammonite did.
The tenderness
and then the aggression. And I was like,
You already
yes,
have
women
the
can be lustful, but yeah, I don't, I just, yeah.
That's it.
I don't really know how to explain my thoughts on it, and that's what bothers me. It's kind of like Tar. Yeah, it bothers me when I can't express my thoughts about
it. We're working through this, like, in lifetime. Like, I just asked you this, and now we're, yeah. like, working through it.
Yeah.
So it's not like we have had time to think about this
before. I was
going to
say, I have not considered this before, and now I don't know what I think.
Yeah. I think it's what you said. We get the tenderness first, so that's already there. So then for that to kind of happen, it feels jarring and out of place.
Yeah, I think you're right when you say jarring, for sure.
This is what I'm saying with, it's not unrealistic for that to happen, but because we already had that tenderness built up, that's why it feels unrealistic.
Yeah.
So I think that's...
Yeah.
I am happy with that.
Oh, I'm glad we established that.
Yeah? Do you feel the same?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, great.
Okay, great. Cool.
So yeah, that...
So that happened.
I was just wondering that.
No, fair play.
Yeah.
So
I will also say, just really quickly... This is, like, the only lesbian film where I have to skip the sex scenes. Like, rewatching it now, I just kind of scroll through it. I just can't sit there and watch them.
I mean, I've only seen the film once, so...
Yeah, but, I mean, I was, like, kind of...
Really... Once was enough for that scene.
Break. I just can't. I feel uncomfortable. Like, for me, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, so I'll give some context. What happens is that they're really, really happy. The summary that I've got open... It says, their relationship blossoms as they gleefully swim in the ocean and share their meals.
So, this is my favorite scene in this film, when they swim in the ocean together.
Lesbian bliss.
I love it. That is where it feels real and where it feels good.
Yes, because
they're just
happy
kissing
and
happy.
Comfortable and content and kissing.
Like swimming.
Yeah.
And it's so sweet.
That feels realistic.
That feels realistic.
Definitely.
I love that scene. And Kate Winslet is laughing with teeth. I could see her teeth.
Cute.
She smiled.
But then... what happens is a letter arrives from Roderick, Charlotte's husband. Remember him. He basically is like, I'm home, and instructs her to return to London. And then, absolutely devastated, Charlotte and Mary, then the night before Charlotte leaves, have this insane sex scene. And, I mean... We've kind of got the sense of your thoughts. I've never seen a sex scene like that on film.
Honestly, like, props to this
happening. Yeah, I mean, fair play, the commitment. I hope they had an intimacy coordinator. I'm sure they did.
Saoirse has raved about filming that scene in the media.
I bet she has.
She loved it. It was on her birthday. On her birthday. She loved it.
What a birthday present. I know. Kate Winslet.
I mean,
doing
personally, my number one wish for a birthday present.
So. You heard it here first. NSFW, trigger warning, content warning.
Yeah.
No children
Super
allowed.
Graphic.
Super graphic.
To be honest, I will say, I think it's excellent. The only problem for me is that I can't look at them have sex together.
Yeah.
But I think the scene itself, I mean, fucking, they did their research. Well done. Like, it just, I think it's great. I can't believe we got to see that. I can't believe I got to see that in a cinema. Too bad I giggled, but...
Too bad I giggled. I mean, I saw it on Netflix a couple months ago, because it was on Netflix at that point. I don't know if it still is. I didn't check. But I literally, I mean, I had to pause and get up and do a lap. Because I was like, whoo! Oh my God!
See, imagine that in a cinema full of people.
But also, like... I just was like, but it was just like one thing after the next.
That's
very
it.
Quickly.
Very quick.
And I was like, obviously this, I mean, yeah, obviously it wasn't realistic. I was just like, oh, they're doing that. And now they're doing that. And now they're doing it. It was just very quick. And I was like, no.
It was too quick, obviously.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
I think.
It was very, again.
I mean, obviously.
They really gave into themselves.
They can't like give us a whole 30-minute sex scene. Yeah, I think, I mean...
I just was like, whoa!
To be honest...
Oh my God.
I think they went really bold with it, and...
Props to them, because, like, I thought The Favourite was bold.
Oh, yeah.
This was like...
It's just insane.
This came
graphic.
Out the year after The Favourite, right? Because The Favourite was 2018, 2019. This was, like,
2020.
This was 2020, yeah. Yeah, so I thought that was bold. And then this appears out of nowhere, and you just see... All the things. I'm trying not to be too crass.
I think in a lot of ways it is very realistic. But
yeah.
Then, like you say, obviously you can't. I mean, you have to edit.
Yeah, true.
Obviously, so things went really fast.
It was already intense with the quick editing, to be fair. Like, it didn't, I mean...
Yeah, the camera work was interesting. There was a lot of like skewed angles and stuff and movement.
What did you think of that? Because I personally didn't love it. I didn't love like the sudden close-ups and then the sudden like going backwards and forwards.
It was trying to be very artsy about the sex, I think.
Yeah.
But once again, for me, there were other issues that I was more focused on.
Yeah. What did you think about their chemistry during the sex scene?
No.
Really?
Yeah. This is what I'm saying. It felt like a mother-daughter thing.
That's kind of what it felt like throughout the whole film. So, I mean, I've personally felt really uncomfortable watching the sex scene.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they're both fantastic actresses.
Yeah.
So they did a really good job. This is no criticism of either of them, but I was watching it like, I need to shower this off of me.
Yeah.
It was shameful.
Oh my God, I know.
And I love them both so much. I respect them as actresses so much, which makes it so painful, but I was like, no, please.
This is what I'm saying. Like, it was so hard. God, my heart was broken that day, okay? Yeah. I've been waiting for this film for 2 years when it came out.
Yeah, it's so devastating.
It's like you say, they're both so good. It's nothing against them, but they just don't have that chemistry to have a sex scene like that.
I know.
Yeah,
so that was a mess.
Anyway.
And then she leaves. Charlotte just leaves the next day. And it's like, oh, sad.
Yeah.
And then Mary's mum dies.
Her mum has like the saddest story to God.
Oh, yeah, we didn't really talk about her mum.
That's okay.
But she lost those of children, didn't she?
Yeah.
Basically. So Mary's all she has. And then she dies. And then Mary finds herself completely on her own.
Yeah.
Her isolation continues. It's going in a very opposite trajectory to God's Own Country. Lesbian sadness. A thing we do not like and we do not rate on this podcast.
For sure.
Considering it was a fictional narrative about real people, could we not just invent some happiness?
Right.
They get the briefest bliss. And then Mary's on her own. But then Mary receives a letter from Charlotte asking her to go to London. And Mary's got nothing to lose.
No.
She doesn't have to care for her mum anymore. So she goes. And we see Mary leave her isolation bubble and go into the city. And this next part makes me feel distressed. As if we weren't distressed enough. Charlotte invites Mary into her home, takes her upstairs and shows her a fully furnished bedroom ready for her to move into.
Yeah.
Basically saying to Mary, come and live with me.
And my husband.
Yeah. Come and immerse yourself into my life in a room that I have decorated for you without asking you. I've just sprung this on you after you've come to visit me in London. And you see Charlotte in a completely different light because, like, even by the way she interacts with her maid...
Yeah.
And Mary suddenly is like, oh, she's this rich girl, basically.
Young rich girl, very naive.
Yeah. Doesn't have a clue about the real world and doesn't care about the real world. And all of a sudden, Mary gets the ick.
Yeah.
She full on gets the ick on camera. Like, and you see it. You see her get the ick.
So painful.
And she basically was like, you don't respect my life. I will not become an ornament.
Yeah.
In your cage. That's what she says. And you're Preach. Like, damn, she's comparing herself to her fossils. Okay, cool. What did you think of that? Because I was literally like, yuck. Can you actually imagine?
No, it's yuck. It's so...
yeah.
It just really shows that Charlotte has just no clue about anything.
Mm.
Anything. And it's... For the film, it's just such a shame. Like, what an ending. Ugh.
I know.
I mean... at this point in the film I've completely already tuned out and for me it's already not happening, but so painful to watch.
Yeah,
like, God, you invest like so much time in these characters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and this is a parallel to what Mary invested in Charlotte, really.
Yeah.
And then you just find out like, oh, this is just unfortunate, really.
Yeah, literally.
And the maid, like, so Charlotte kisses Mary in front of the maid, and obviously Mary's
that's the bit I was thinking of.
Yeah, she's like, oh no, like, this is so weird. And she's like, oh, it's just the maid. And like the maid just looks at her like,
yeah,
I don't know what happens.
As if she's not a real person that's gonna then go and downstairs, like,
exactly. It's just so odd.
Yeah.
And it's very like, you can feel the disappointment.
Mary's like, Mary. I fell in love with a rich girl, rip.
Yeah.
That's the vibe.
It's just really sad because she still hasn't fully come out of her shell.
Yeah.
But that she's also just not allowed to at the end.
I know.
Like, it doesn't happen for her. Like, that's it. That's it. That's what we leave with. She hasn't been set free. Nothing has really changed. She's gonna go back to her old life.
Yeah, there's no arc.
No.
It begins as it ends. Mary is alone. Because
that's the arc.
They go, well, yeah, it sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, where's Mary's happiness? She's not got any. Like, she's just on her own looking at rocks that she doesn't get credit for. Because that's the thing. The final scene, she goes to the British Museum. She sees her fossil,
mm-hmm.
but it makes no mention of her. Mm-hmm. It's got no name. Well, it's got a man's name.
Yeah.
It hasn't got her name on it. And then Charlotte arrives, and they're looking at each other. They're standing on either side of the glass, looking at each other.
Yeah.
And that's how it ends. Which is like, that was a really interesting shot. And kind of thinking about how they're both kind of trapped in different cages, I suppose. Because, I mean, I kind of lost sympathy for Charlotte at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of do need to be sympathetic because she's been trapped in this heteronormative marriage to survive. And obviously she doesn't want it. And she's, you know, she's got nothing, really. She's got nothing going for her. Because she's also kind of on her own. It sucks. Like,
yeah,
they're just looking at each other and they can't have each other, and then it ends and you're like, oh great, another film about sad lesbians clowns.
This is the thing, and this is a spoiler, by the way, for A Portrait of a Lady on Fire, but this film has been compared to that a lot because it came out right after.
Yes. Yeah.
And the thing in Portrait of a Lady on Fire is at the end they also don't get together, but so much has changed for both of them, and you see that in like the most poignant, beautiful, powerful scene at the end, last scene.
Yeah.
You see how it has changed so much for both of them.
Well, they've completely, their characters are completely revolutionized.
Completely different.
It's beautiful. I love that. Well, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah,
film,
it's just incredibly powerful because of that.
Yeah.
But in Ammonite, it just, that doesn't happen. Like you say, she just goes back to where she was at the start. Like nothing changes. It hasn't changed her in any way. Not that we know. And that's just so deeply sad
because it just makes
it all feel so meaningless.
Well, that's exactly it. It feels meaningless because you can't actually... You finish the film and you're like, well, what have I got out of this?
Yeah.
Not in a nasty way to the filmmaker. Like, the film itself was good, but you're just kind of like, they've achieved nothing. The characters have achieved nothing. They've gone nowhere. It's like very anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Because there's no consequence either, really.
No, not really.
There's no, like, big dramatic moment. It's just that. No.
So yeah, I mean, for me, this film is a no. I've tried to rewatch it multiple times and I can't do it.
Ammonite, no. God's Own Country, yes.
But you liked Ammonite, right?
I did like Ammonite. I think the more I thought about it, the more I was like, this is problematic. But on a first watching, I enjoyed it. There's a lot that we haven't talked about that I did enjoy.
We could talk about it.
Well, Fiona Shaw's character I enjoyed. Oh, yeah. Like, I kind of liked that unspoken relationship that was. I mean, they left a lot of her character and her history off screen, but I quite liked that.
Yeah. Those scenes are exciting.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. You could kind of feel the tension. I think they had more chemistry than Kate did with Saoirse, truth be told. But, I mean, everyone was great. Fantastic performances all round.
Yeah, I'm just not that big of a fan. I found this review online that I just wanted to share the title because I thought it was so funny.
Please do. I love that.
It's a review written for Tattler. I think it's a magazine. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, the title is Ammonite Review. Kate Winslet and Saoirse Ronan's geology romance doesn't rock.
Oh, that is good.
I love it.
It
does not rock.
It doesn't rock.
And the conclusion of this review, which I thought is very, kind of summarizes
how
I feel.
Shout out to the author of this review, by the way.
Yeah, I need to get his name.
Mm-hmm.
is. But letting hot women touch each other on screen isn't enough anymore.
Yes.
The characters have to be well drawn and the dialogue well written.
I think I might have read that review.
Maybe.
I've definitely read I've read that review or a similar review. It hits the nail on the head.
Exactly. The writer is called Leif Arbuthnot.
Great. Shout out to you for absolutely summarizing our thoughts. It's not enough to have like women thirsty for each other on screen anymore. They've got to have connection. They've got to have a journey. Like we just talked about Colette.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know I mentioned it earlier. We just talked about Colette on the Gay Actually podcast. I say just, it was 2 months ago now. But there's a journey. There's an arc.
Yeah.
It's not enough to have beautiful acting and intimate scenes anymore.
That was a tough pill. That was a tough pill I had to swallow.
Yeah.
Because I was just excited for Kate Winslet being a lesbian.
But if you're making a queer film, you have to connect with your queer audience. And you know lesbians are going to be watching this film and feeling nothing. Anyway. On that note.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Gay Actually as part of the UK Film Review podcast. If you like this episode, we do monthly episodes here on the UK Film Review podcast. There's also a bunch of other series that you probably already listen to. The Phantom Zone, The Scream Test, The UK Film Club with Chris and Brian. My voice broke. Ryan. Sorry, Brian. We have a bunch of series on here that you may like to listen to. If you'd like to hear more from us, we have the Gay Actually podcast on Spotify. It is called Gay Actually. We are working on getting it onto Apple Podcasts, but it is on SoundCloud and on Spotify, so watch this space. If you liked our episode, or if you have any requests, or you want to hear more, we are on Instagram at gay_actually, or at gayactuallyuk@gmail.com.
Beautiful. Send us emails, because we love it.
I love an email. I actually haven't checked the inbox for a while, so okay. That might be
maybe
a...
we have like 20 emails in inbox. Yeah. I doubt it.
It's probably mostly Instagram notifications, but that's fine by me. But thank you very much, everyone. Take care, stay safe, and goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks, Joyce.
Thanks, Amber.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.